When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Arrowhead Attic podcast. We've been having it just now ended after the NFL draft was over. We've been attending a 5-day long rave. It just now was over until this podcast. So
what day is it, dude?
I'm tired. What day is it, man? What's going on? Welcome, fellas. Welcome, everyone, to the show. My man, Sterling Holmes, is here. I'm here. Excited to have our guest, Price Carter, back on the show, reviewing some of the draft. If I were the lead singer of Nickelback, I would look and say, look at this Broncos draft. Every time I do, it makes me laugh. Every time I do, it makes me laugh. How are you today, by the way, Sterling? And how are you feeling about everyone's draft in the AFC West, but ours?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah, and we'll get into it. My initial thoughts are Chiefs were great. Obviously, we'll get into more depth with that. I thought the Chargers sneakily had a very good draft. The Chargers, quite frankly, made me a little nervous with some of their moves. Ladd McConkey is going to be a phenomenal fit for that roster. And then Brendan Rice getting him in the 7th round. What a great get that was, in my opinion. I like what the Chargers did overall. Broncos hit their first pick, but I think from then on, they got a couple of nice cornerbacks that I liked, a couple of nice pieces. I'm like, okay, they didn't completely butcher it, but the Bo Nix pick is questionable at best, but I also understand where they are coming from. They feel like they have to try and do something. I can't knock them for it. I mean, it's one of those situations where it sucks to be in that spot, but what else are they going to do? They had to take a shot. I don't think Bo Nix is going to work out, but I at least understand where they are coming from. And the Raiders, I think, were fine. The Raiders were fine. Brock Bowers in the first round, you might question, hey, you had Michael Mayer last year at first round tight end, but they took BPA. That was the best player available. With Antonio Pierce, we'll see a lot of 12 personnel. They're going to be physical. And the thing is, Mayer as well as Brock Bowers can line up all over the field. So the more I dove into that, I thought the AFC West as a whole, quite frankly, had a really good draft. A couple of ones that stood out to me were the Eagles, which, of course, they're always the offseason favorites, it seems like. But I can't knock it when you get Cooper DeJean and not Tarion Arnold. Was it Quinyon Mitchell? Quinyon Mitchell. When you got both those guys, two, in my opinion, the two best cornerbacks in the draft, and they fell to you at those spots. I can't knock the Eagles. While I think the Bills had the right process, I think the results of what they did were atrocious. The Bills, again, I was fine with them trading with the Chiefs, not from the Chiefs' perspective. That made me very happy. But if you're a Bills fan, I think you could talk yourself into gathering more draft capital. But what they did with said draft capital, at least where we're sitting here on April 30th, the four dudes have taken an actual snap in the NFL. I'm questioning what the Bills are doing.
Interesting. I have some alternate opinions from you. We'll get into all that with Price coming in. We got a little bit to talk about before we get to the draft, though. We'll bring Price on in just a second. I know Chiefs fans out there want to get to talking about the draft. Before we do, we got a great deal for some folks. We're dealing, and then we're drafting. Sterling, you want to tell them what we got?
Yeah, there's two great deals today. One from DraftKings and one that Travis Kelce received. We'll get to Travis Kelce in just a second. But DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New users can place a $5 first bet on any sport to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets when you sign up with our code Arrowhead. You will also receive one no-sweat single-game parlay every single day. And the best part is that you will get both rewards, even if that first bet loses. Using our code Arrowhead not only gets you these great bonuses, but also directly supports our podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Arrowhead to maximize your first bets. You know, right now you have Major League Baseball, you have the NBA playoffs. Just because the NFL is over and the draft is over does not mean betting is over. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify.
How fun are the Thunder right now, by the way?
So much fun, man. If you don't know how to tank, that's how you tank. As a Sixers fan, I'm finding it very hard to TTP right now. I am not trusting the process because I trusted the Thunder's process way more than the 76ers.
It's really something else. By the way, I live in Indianapolis. It's fun to watch the Pacers too. No defense.
No.
But none. I love me some Halliburton. I love me that the whole crew is a lot of fun to watch. That's for sure. Anyway, let's get to it just real fast. Yesterday, Tom Pelissero, Ian Rappaport broke the original news. Pelissero followed up, kind of tag teaming together to make Chiefs Kingdom believe that there was actually a 2-year extension placed upon Travis Kelce's already remaining 2-year deal. He signed a 4-year extension back in 2020 to $57.25 million. And that was tagged on to the time he already had left, which takes us through 2025. Then yesterday, when that news dropped, we even did an emergency podcast here and did the whole treatment as like a OMG, we have Kelce for 4 more years. And I remember even saying, we're going to have him here by the time we're talking about the next presidential election. It seemed outrageous, too good to be true. And as it turns out, it was. Folks, by the way, in case you didn't already hear, the 2-year deal tacked on. Pelissero later came back and said, my bad, false report, should have worded this better or understood better when I reported it, that it's actually just a 2-year restructuring of the final 2 years, which changes some of the conversation. However, it doesn't change other parts of the conversation. When you think about it only as a 2-year restructure, I'm still thinking that no matter how much he's making now, just over $17 million a year to eclipse Darren Waller's $17 million AAV, average annual value, Travis Kelce's still maybe the biggest discount in the NFL.
It's a great call. He's basically getting a $4 million raise starting next year, which I don't think anyone is going to be upset by this. But I mean, someone had to make some money in that couple. You know, I don't think Taylor Swift was making enough. Someone had to, you know, step their game up.
How do you keep the lights on there? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, they probably own half the continental United States at this point. But let's be real. I mean, he was vastly underpaid, and tight end market is starting to catch up to the rest of the positions. But still, compared to their value and how good Travis Kelce is and what he brings to this offense and what he means to this organization, he still is an underpaid player. But I'm glad we're starting to see the Chiefs take care of him. You know, I don't think Travis Kelce was necessarily always a guy who was asking for more money. We've never gotten that indication from him. But it's always lovely to see an organization take care of their star players. But I think that's kind of what this is. They're star players. You don't see this for guys like Willie Gay Jr., who left. Tyrann Mathieu, left. Charvarius Ward, left. Legarius Sneed, left. Those are very, very good players, right? But they're star players. The guys they want to retire a Chief, they'll make sure they get taken care of. To an extent, they did it similarly with Chris Jones. A little different, but they gave him a lot of money there, right? They gave him pretty damn close to top dollar. They keep their studs that they want to stay here forever in Kansas City. And they did that with Travis Kelce. This should squelch any concerns of, you know, he's only got 1 more year left. I think, no, this clearly means he has at least 2. Now, there was a lot of talk today when they were talking about this, basically saying, yeah, we'll evaluate. And this is a 2-year deal. And maybe he'll ride off into the sunset after 2 years. But my pushback to that is, I would not be surprised if, you know, they had the camera crews around that final year and then they're going through the locker room, like Jason Kelce and all that stuff. And then it comes after 2 years and they go, you know what? I'm not ready. Yeah. I'm not ready. Because he'll be 37 at that point, right? Going into that, if it's the following year, he'll be older. But he is such a unique player at a unique position where I think you can see him play. Again, maybe not 1,200 yards a season, but if he's 37, putting up 800, 900, I think the Chiefs would still say, yeah, sure, come on back, Kelce. But I just find him to be a guy who's in a very good situation of if he wants to walk away after 2 years and go into the media stuff and hang around and be the face of whatever podcast, whatever he wants to do, he'll be great at that. But if he wants to stick around, there's going to be a spot for him here in Kansas City. I don't think the drafting of Jared Wiley is going to all of a sudden change that. I don't think the bringing in of Irv Smith is going to all of a sudden change that. Yeah. This is still Travis Kelce we're talking about here. So the 2 years should give you confidence that he's here at least 2 years, but I don't think it only means he's here 2 years like I think a ton of people are expecting.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seen more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. After doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. Their food. What she discovered that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true even for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do the same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. If you want to see a dog, your dog, with more energy, healthier skin and coat, looking and acting younger, then this is for you. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/arrowhead and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/arrowhead.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts there. One, I think you're right. I think you're right in terms of that it may not be the end. Think about what a competitive personality like Travis is going to have. And when you start dangling some of those Tony Gonzalez numbers that seemed so out of reach, and then he looks up and realizes that's just a season or two away from being my name. Maybe I can do this again. And here's what I think. I think there's like a barometer here. I think on the front end, he could be self-motivated by some of those numbers, right? But here's the other thing. Travis last season was discovering new loves. I mean, literally love with Taylor, but some of the entertainment love too. I mean, he's like getting out there. He's like, boy, the people love me even off the field. And I think that scratches an itch for him, right?
And he ain't getting hit.
And he doesn't get hit. And so here's what I think. I don't know if this is the case. This is complete conjecture on my part. But something tells me that it was very smart of Clark Hunt to go, you know what? You may not have asked for it. We could save a few bucks by not doing this. But I want you to stay motivated here too. I want you to feel appreciated here. Like, the bottom line is this, and this is true of any, this is my wisdom for the show. I've never known a man who didn't lean toward where he's validated, period. That's like marital advice. That's vocational advice on how to be a good boss. If you validate someone else, they will lean toward you in ways that you want them to. And that's true of athletes as well. And so here's Clark Hunt saying, hey, let me validate you. How would you like a raise? Let's make sure the Darren Wallers of the world are not known as being the highest paid. We're going to take care of you. He throws out $4 million more dollars, which, by the way, Travis Kelce is helping Clark Hunt print money on demand. So it's nothing to him. And then Travis has got to come back to Arrowhead going, yeah, baby. Right. Like you see that in him. In the response videos,
you heard him talk and the enthusiasm was palpable. It wasn't last year when it seemed like it was a grind. Because he's healthy and all this stuff and he's had time. You just won the Lombardi. I get that. But you heard the excitement in his voice. He sounded like he was 24.
I think it is. I think the Chiefs know that keeping him validated and is to keep him motivated. And this deal was a good thing to go, hey, there's still you like it here too. I think that's what's going on. I think that was my thoughts on the deal, and then maybe some of the milestones will keep him here. We don't know, but yeah, I was glad to see that for Travis. I was glad to see that for the organization.
The one pushback I'll have to the number situation is when he starts seeing Tony G, he had a chance to keep that 1,000-yard streak alive. Now that's different than historical as far as organizational, all that stuff, but him sitting at week 18, game 17, when he had a chance to get that 1,000 yards, makes me wonder to an extent how much he actually values some of these longevity numbers and some of these just historical numbers. That's my only pushback there. I do see a question from Joshua Clayton saying, so the Chiefs and Royals are splitting. What are your guys' thoughts on that? We can hit on that more next episode because I know we're bringing in Price Carter here, but I do want to have a conversation about that maybe next week as we kind of have more of a dead period, if you will, after we break down the draft. But I do think there's some fascinating thoughts there. And I think that the Chiefs and Royals splitting are best for each individual party.
Yeah. Also, Thomas Carter has a draft related question about Kamal Haddon from Tennessee. We will talk about him and more. We'll definitely talk about Justin Ross as the offseason goes on. But we want to bring in Price Carter. Price has been waiting in the wings for a few minutes. Price, you there?
Fellas, how are we doing today?
My man, how are you doing today, Price?
I'm doing great. It's good to live in a post-draft world here a little bit where I don't just constantly have like the need to or the urge to continue to writing and looking at people. But now it's just kind of like clinging to the last sweet moments of the NFL season. We'll get the schedule release, which is always, you know, kind of a one day to a day event. And then it's just the dark times, just waiting for guys walking down the hill in St. Joe is like, you know, what we're waiting for at this point.
By the way, your personal draft prep, like I'm sure you take a break, but how long until you start watching like some juniors from this year, that kind of thing?
So I'm committed to trying to redo my process a little bit. This year I kind of waited until the college football season started, partially to kind of coincide with the Chiefs' needs. I think this year I'm going to start taking a look at some guys that I think make some sense here earlier. I'm probably going to wait until after 4th of July a little bit just because the transfer portal is so wild. But, you know, I put out a way too early 2025 mock today. There's some guys that you just know are already going to be in the conversation. Like half the first round is going to be like Ohio State players maybe. So because so many of those guys went back. But yeah, I'm committed to trying to revamp my process a little bit. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, in case you all missed it, Price was churning out incredible content for AA the whole time. We had Price's big board for the last few months.
Is right, baby.
That's right. Rest in peace, Bob Barker. Happy Gilmore star.
Yeah, it was great to have you this season, Price, and all the content you were putting out there in terms of mock drafts and analysis and, of course, the big board. Wanted to bring you on the show to kind of walk us through here in the pod your thoughts on the draft class. I haven't had a chance to talk to Sterling about the draft class too, so we're just kind of thinking it'll be a riff session for us through seven rounds. And of course, with seven rounds, you want to start at the top. Let me ask you this. Let me ask for your initial emotional impulse with the Xavier Worthy pick. When the Chiefs trade up to 28, and you see that's the target, what were you thinking?
You know, we do this thing, especially like some people that can't stand draft season because it's all just guesswork until the answer comes along, right? It's not analysis of things that are actually happening. It's just endless guessing. Now, I will say, I feel like here in Chiefs Kingdom, we've done a great job of finding about probably 10 to 12 players that the Chiefs are likely to pick. In the last couple of years, I felt like I was very familiar with all the players the Chiefs have taken, particularly in the first round. But about a few days before the draft, I tweeted something out. I just found some hype video of Xavier Worthy on Twitter. And I said, deep down inside, I've always known Xavier Worthy was a Chief. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Whenever I saw those Patrick Mahomes sunglasses on Twitter, because that's like the first way I saw that the Chiefs were on the clock, I was like, oh, it was always Xavier Worthy. I mean, Mahomes was tweeting about him at the combine whenever he ran the fast 40-yard dash. It was always going to be Xavier Worthy. And, you know, I tweeted out a couple days before, too. Last time Andy Reid had taken a first-round wide receiver was Jeremy Maclin in 2009. So I did have some hesitancy there where it was like, well, they just don't really take wide receivers early. But you think about the fit, you think about it just makes too much sense. And I would also relate part of that, like the Worthy pick making sense, relate it to teams. They have different players on their boards, right? Like Jordan Morgan went before the Chiefs pick. And on the live stream, I said, this is a great pick if you're a Chiefs fan, because I don't think Jordan Morgan was ever going to be on the Chiefs board as a tackle. There are just some players that are going to be on teams' boards differently. There was teams that probably had Xavier Worthy off their board strictly because of the size. For the Chiefs, they're going to have that speed rated higher on their board than a lot of other teams. So the fit, it just makes so much sense. And when we're doing draft analysis, obviously we try to put it through the Chiefs' lens here at Arrowhead Addict. But universally, you know, like Dane Brugler had from The Athletic, he had Xavier Worthy as his 10th wide receiver. But if you could tell Dane that he was going to be on the Chiefs, he probably wouldn't be his 10th wide receiver. Partially just because that's scheme and fit. If you line him up on, you know, like the Patriots this year, and he's just running, you know, against press corners and getting physical presses off the line of scrimmage, you're not going to like him as much as you are on the Chiefs. So my initial reaction was just like, of course, this is always the way it was going to be.
For me, I think what's interesting with Xavier Worthy in particular here, it's almost like people use the 4.21 and use it against him. Like, it's almost like if he would have ran a 4.31, people would be like, oh, yeah, he's a better wide receiver. But because he ran a 4.21, everyone's like, well, look at the other fast guys who never made an impact in the NFL. It's like, yeah, that's great and all. But a lot of those fast guys didn't have the same skill set or production in college that Xavier Worthy had. Xavier Worthy averaged over 900 yards a season in college. He had, 26 touchdowns in college. He had 40 punt returns in college. Like, this was a man who played in, 12, 13, and 14 games consecutively in college. So while the size does concern me to an extent, I love how we see a guy who's slight and say, well, he's automatically getting injured. While we always say, oh, he's a big guy? No chance he gets injured. Yeah, because like Bo Jackson, the freak of nature that he was, of course, was the pinnacle of health. Like, freak injuries happen, but they happen across the NFL, whether you're big or small. Sometimes just give me the guy who has production and who has shown to stay healthy. Sammy Watkins is a relatively big guy, right? He's been perpetually injured. So yeah. I'm not always a massive fan of using size as this end-all, be-all indicator of a guy's health and what's he going to be like in the NFL. A couple other two side notes here. The Chiefs actually tried to trade up higher for Xavier Worthy. They talked about this. This, to me, means that they had him clear-cut as wide receiver 5 on their board. That means in their eyes, there was a huge drop-off from Worthy to the Ladd McConkeys, the Keon Colemans, the Xavier Leggetts, right? Because if that's the case, they wouldn't have traded up or even tried to get higher than the Bills, right? They were trying to go up at, I think they said 24, 23, around there. So for me, like, they love Xavier Worthy. That tells me a ton here. And oh, by the way, they tried trading up 10-plus picks higher for Kingsley Suamataia. And what happened? The other teams told him to kick rocks, and they still got their guy. So when you look at this draft for Kansas City, the board fell their way. They got the positions of need. They had a lot of fallers go right to them, and they tried to trade up higher multiple times, and the NFL basically said, no, pound sand, we're not going to help you, and the Chiefs still ended up with who they wanted. By the way, if they would have tried to trade up higher to, like, let's say 25 instead of 28 for Xavier Worthy, what would have happened? They probably would have lost Jaden Hicks. They would have lost one of these guys. So this was about as good of a draft process-wise, in my opinion, that the Chiefs possibly could have had. This is, again, process-wise. We won't know for sure until they take the field of process. That's what we can grade on right now. I see Clayton right there saying Tank Dell got injured last year. Yeah, sure. Injuries happen, though, in the NFL. You can bring up every single bigger wide receiver that had injured as well. Because I can do that. Ja'Marr Chase got injured last year, too. T. Higgins got injured last year, too. I can bring up a plethora of dudes who are bigger and have been injured. But we're not going to do that. So I just think when you point to small guys, hey, I got to think of the small guy over here. Come on. I'm just saying, I think it's a little narrative based when you point to his size and say he has to be injured, while Xavier Leggett, no chance he gets injured because he's a big guy. That to me is asinine.
Yeah, and I think you bring up some good points, Sterling. And, you know, the size is going to be the first thing that people talk about when we're talking about cons for Worthy. And it's more than just injury, right? If the ball is in a contested catch situation, he's likely not coming down with that ball.
That's fine. That's different. That's part of his game. I'm content with that. Mine's just strictly injury.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think landing spot has a lot to do with this. The Texans, they've done a lot of really good things, but they are still a very run oriented offense. That injury that Tank Dell was in on, it was a run play at the goal line. I'm not necessarily sure Xavier Worthy would be in on this play. Now, he, you know, could very well get injured being rolled up on a screen that he took. He took a lot of volume at Texas. He was the Quinn Ewers like elixir for how poor of a accurate passer he is. So they used him on a ton of screens and bubbles. There's a YouTube cut up of every single one of the completions to Xavier Worthy. I'd recommend people go watch the amount of screens and bubbles and tunnel screens and stuff that he took. it was a lot to it. Also, Xavier Worthy throws the ball pretty well. He's had a couple of big passes to Jatavion Sanders and A.D. Mitchell, which is a fun quirk I didn't see the first time I was looking at him. But yeah, I think, you know, the process overall, some people have brought up the fact that like, oh, they didn't need, like the Bills fans, they're like, oh, well, they didn't need to trade up for Xavier Worthy. They just, you know, they just got antsy. And I do think that there might be some truth to that. Brett Veach has always liked to go get his guy. But I will also bring up from pick 28 to about 40, there was approximately 7 wide receivers taken. The Chiefs essentially kicked off the next wide receiver run rather than it happening in front of them like it did last year. Because after that, Pearsall went, Leggett went, Coleman went, Polk went. There was quite a few wide receivers gone until we got into that defensive tackle run with like Tavondre Sweat, Ruka Roro, and those players. So I, you know what, if this was a player that was highly rated on their board, they maintained the quantity of picks, which is a big deal to me. Yes, they dropped down from 95 to late in the fourth. That one hurt. But honestly, looking at the board at pick 95, I made a point to do it. I wasn't heartbroken by it. I really wasn't. And having those back-to-back picks, that was a nice little quirk too. So overall, I like the move.
So let's get into Kingsley Suamataia before we get, because we got 7 dudes to get through. So I know we have to rush us along. Richard's going to give us the old hook, like we're on SNL or something like that, doing a monologue. So let's give our quick round table grades for the Xavier Worthy pick for Kansas City. I'm going to go an A. This to me is a solid A. If you would have gone Cooper DeJean, I did a whole entire what would I do differently kind of pick if I would have done something different, because I think it's kind of fun, right? But overall, I have no idea. They had a game plan. They executed the game plan. They trusted the game plan. I liked it. So for me, this was an A for Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to give it a solid B. You know, I'd probably give it an A if they were able to sit there and wait for him to come to him at 32, but you don't get the hindsight there. I still really like the move. It's a player that has some limitations. I'm not sure that we're ever going to look at Worthy and say this is a true wide receiver one, a guy that's going to get, you know, $33 million a year in the NFL. But I do think that he's going to be a very useful player that does some really impactful things beyond just catching the football too.
I can't give this a grade, and I'm going to use this as a chance to get us into the next pick too, because I either have a problem with this or I don't, and I don't know what I think of this. I admire the bravado of Brett Veach here, who could rest on his laurels and know that, hey, Mahomes is going to keep us going. Let's just raise the floor. Like, that's what I was hoping for with this draft.
I'm
like,
Vlad McConkey, right? That would have been
I did. Or picks like it. Get the sure thing. Get the guys that you know you're going to be able to plug in. I wanted them to chase pro-ready guys. Then they trade up for Xavier Worthy. And then we grab Kingsley Suamataia in the second round. And here we have Project. And then you have like, oh, maybe too little. You know, comes with all these questions in the first round and a raw project in the second round, where his value is all about projectable value. And I'm looking at that and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, we're doing what the Bears should be doing. We're doing what the Raiders and the Broncos should be doing, which is going for super high upside plays because you need them. And I was thinking, when you're already on the mountaintop, you don't like, whatever it is I'm trying to think. And so originally that was my thought process. I thought, oh gosh, really? The problem with sustained success is that it's hard to maintain the talent pool to keep you there. And I was thinking at the time, look, like, let's just get pro ready players in here. Like the Karloftises, the workmanlike pluggers. That's what I'm thinking. Right. And there were people there. So like when the cornerback pool was still there from like the first one in the draft is still there to be taken in the mid-20s, I'm like, go get him. Go get him. Like you're going to have an elite player in the secondary. Go get him. And, you know, we didn't. It was like, and so I had actually some real problems with the first like 2 days in the draft just from that perspective.
That's really interesting.
Well, but then you get to thinking about the whole class. They actually grabbed some decent performance, like Hicks, Wiley. Like I think those guys were a little bit more pro ready to step in. And at the same time, maybe the way you stay on top is by, hey, when you're picking at 30s, 32, you go to grab those top guys so they keep you on top. So overall, I feel like iffy. Xavier Worthy on paper on a neutral site, I'm iffy about it. But when Andy Reid, Brett Veach, and everyone is like, that was our guy, we wanted him, we fully believe in him, we're trading up to get him, suddenly you're like, oh, well, why am I concerned about a guy who weighs 165 if they're not, my job's not on the line? My, like, if Andy Reid says, this is the guy for us to go vertical again, this is the guy who's going to open everything up again for Kelce and Rice, we're going to work him with Hollywood, and suddenly we're going to be back to the days of Sammy, Tyreek, you know, and Kareem. Suddenly I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense there. So I've kind of done a weird pendulum shift. What do you guys think of all that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. I think you bring up a lot of good points, even though I differ with you with the first two picks. Sure. Part of me is watching what the Warriors dynasty has done. And the fact that they went for mid-level guys for so long, the one time they did try and go for a high-level guy because they had the second overall draft pick, they blew it with James Wiseman, of course. Yep. But that you can, yes, you're correct, hurt yourself by going for high upside guys instead of floor guys. But they kind of just kept going with floor guys and floor guys and floor guys forever. And then what happens? Well, your stars get old. Kelce's getting old, right? Chris Jones, we hope he's still here and protect him in their four-plus years, right? But then what happens when those guys retire? Well, you have no one. There's no upside. You just have floor guys. And all of a sudden, look what the Warriors did. They are taking a massive step back. Steph's still Steph, but Klay Thompson turned to two scoops of ass real quick, right? Like this is my point. If you only go floor guys, which again, I love the Carl Loftus pick. You knew that about me. That was one of my favorite picks the Chiefs have made in recent years because they needed a guy there. This year in particular, though, I didn't think the Chiefs needed to. And I love Ladd McConkey. You know I love Ladd. But the process the Chiefs have with what they said and how they went and acquired Xavier Worthy makes me believe that there was a clear-cut case in their mind that he was wide receiver five, that he was here and those next grouping of guys were way down yonder. So that gives me confidence. And then when it comes to Kingsley Suamataia, there was a lot of talk about him going 32 to Kansas City. Brett Veach talked about that 35 to 40 range for tackles. They could not believe that Suamataia was falling like that. They tried moving up 10 plus spots higher into the 50s to grab him. No team would trade with the Chiefs, and they still got their guy at 63. Okay. So, whatever your thoughts are, because you know me, again, I like Wanye Morris a lot. I like Wanye, but I still think the value of Suamataia makes this one of my favorite picks in the entire draft. I see what Brian is saying right here. He's talking about, you know, Patrick Paul and what if Xavier Legette goes off? And that's a very good question. Very good. We won't know until obviously years down the road, but I can't argue the process right now. And that's what I'm trying to argue and get my point across is I get what you're saying. It's a very difficult and it will be one-to-one because you can point to whoever was drafted directly after Xavier. You can point to all those guys, although they went before Kingsley and say, hey, could they have traded up higher and got one of those guys? Well, clearly they couldn't have, but point still remains. Those are some positions and players in particular you'll be looking very closely at to see what they do in the NFL. For me, though, it's the process that I thought the Chiefs got right, and that's why I'm happy.
Sure. Yeah, and I think like a little bit of what Matt's saying, it's kind of a go home to your wife type of thing, right? You're at the bar. There's a gorgeous girl sitting over there. Should I go talk to her? Should I buy her a drink? I don't know. She ran a 4.21 at the NFL Combine, and the Chiefs have gotten here a little bit by going home to their wife, right? Like they did the smart thing with Carl Loftus. They did the smart thing with McDuffie. But with that being said, they also took a first round pick last year that hardly saw the field at all, right? And it didn't ultimately end up mattering because you just have the ultimate deodorant that is Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and all that together. One thing I would also say is like, if you're concerned about maybe how the process went, one way you could look at it, I'm not necessarily saying this is a flawless process because there are some fallacies with it, but what if the Chiefs took Suamataia at pick 32 and Xavier Worthy at 63? Like people would be jumping in the streets for that because, oh, we took our medicine and we got the left tackle of the future. And, you know, they waited for him to come to him and then they were slightly aggressive in the second round and got, you know, so, or even if they traded up for like, if the exact pick, like they trade up to 28, takes Kingsley and then slight trade up for Worthy. I think people would be rejoicing about that. So they're, realistically, I mean, kind of getting into the Suamataia pick a little bit, you were talking about some of the guys who went before him. I think one thing that should be acknowledged is like, why was Kingsley the end of that tackle run? why did Rosengarten and Blake Fisher and Patrick Paul, why did those players go before him? Whenever we're sitting here telling ourselves all the things that we love about him as a player.
Yeah.
And one thing I would bring up was just,
I'm sorry, just very quickly to kind of make the point. Again, I love Kingsley, but I just to almost make a point that I heard today that I thought was fascinating. When a player gets picked way higher than they should have been, Bo Nix at 12, well, that's because one team fell in love with him. All it takes is one team to fall in love with you. If a guy falls and falls that many spots, that means every team had the same thought about that player, that they were not as good as I think the media thought they were. And so I think that is a fascinating point of why wasn't Kingsley drafted that high? Why did he fall that much? Because that is not just the Chiefs. That's every team in the NFL saying, we think these guys, these tackles are better than Kingsley Suamataia.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that, you know, I think Donovan Smith is going to be the ultimate litmus test here for the Suamataia pick of what they think of him year one. If he's back here pretty soon or, you know, back in training camp, they obviously viewed him more as a project and a player that's going to need some time, which is fine. You're willing to bet on the upside and the athleticism. Obviously, he was like the third player on Feldman's freaks list. There's a lot to like about him as a player and a prospect, whether he plays year one or not. But if we're looking at the reason for that, part of it is the BYU offense. It is extremely RPO and run-based heavy. I think right now he's very close to an NFL caliber run blocker as a pass blocker. He, in his career at BYU, he has 220 some odd true pass sets where he's dropping back in a kick step and pass blocking rather than firing off the ball and am I running or am I passing, which the RPO is just different. Patrick Paul has more than 400 this season. It's just the style of offense. Now, Blake Freeland was a left tackle for the Cougar, or I can't remember if he played left or right, but a left or right tackle for the Cougars last year and was pretty successful in Indianapolis last year as their starting tackle. So I think we're seeing that transition is working more and more. I think some people were probably scared off by that. And there's just, you know, some, you love the NFL bloodline to Suamataia where, you know, cousins with the Sewell family, he played high school football with.
Guys of that he's related to have played in the NFL. Like that reunion is nuts.
Yeah, get that get them in a donation facility, right? Like there's some good genes there. Puka Nacua too, I think, is like a cousin of some way. Also, yeah. You know, probably some big families too. But you know, I think one thing that I was reading in his profile that's a little interesting is like, you know, he was a top recruit. He committed to Oregon. Obviously, Oregon's a very you know, highly successful program, and he basically chose to leave to go back home closer to his family, to his church. He's engaged. So there might have been some things there where like, hey, does this guy really love football? And as stupid as it is, those things matter to teams, you know, and very, very different situation. But Spencer Rattler, he fell way further than anyone did. And the teams were scared off by that Netflix documentary. So we don't know the full story here. But overall for the pick, you love the value. You love getting him at 63. There's a lot of things to really like about him as a player. The fit is there. And yeah, I do truly think that he has the ability to play left tackle. Obviously, he split time at left and right at BYU. So that's exciting. You love the athleticism and you bet on your development. Andy Heck's a great offensive line coach. And the Chiefs, they know how to help their tackles. I feel fairly good about the fact that Juwan Taylor can have a better year this year than last year, partially because I think of some of the penalties and stuff. Hopefully that won't be as big of an issue for him since he's had the whole offseason to correct his process there. They can get help to Suamataia if he's on the left side. So overall, I really like this pick. I'd probably give it like a solid B+ as well.
It's an A+ for me, man. This was my favorite pick of the entire draft. And again, this is for a guy who was that high on Wanya Morris. I just think the value was such. This to me was BPA, best player available. That's why. I talked about him at 32 for Kansas City nonstop. And again, even if Wanya starts this year, I'm intrigued. They talked today. Was it today or yesterday that Brett Veach spoke? And I think it was actually yesterday. And basically they asked Donovan Smith. He was asked about Donovan Smith saying, hey, is Donovan Smith coming back? What are your thoughts there? And he goes, no, these guys are going to take it and we'll see after OTAs. So if Donovan Smith comes back, that's bad news. If the Chiefs re-sign Donovan Smith, that means neither one of these guys took the starting job. But I think one of these guys will, and eventually they're going to try and probably get out of Juwan Taylor's contract. and they both have versatility at left and right tackle. So that's my personal opinion. I like both these guys, Wanye and him. When you have two guys with upside, two guys with versatility, two guys who are blue chip prospects at one point, who I also think fit the system, who are playing right now next to either Trey Smith or Joe Tooney for at least right this season, I think you have to be pretty excited.
Let's move on to the fourth round here. The Chiefs had back-to-back almost picks, 131, 133. Jared Wiley, tight end out of TCU. How glad were you to see a mid-round tight end grab? Let's go to you, Price.
Well, there was a lot of things to really like about this. One, something that I've been very big about is that the Chiefs need to find as many ways as possible to continue to invest in the offense beyond just offensive line. They've done a great job of that, and I hope that they continue to do so. But the Chiefs, they're just never going to be in a position to get a Rome Odunze or Marvin Harrison Jr. in the draft unless something tragically has gone wrong. So they need to continue to invest in players beyond just wide receivers, and that being tight ends and running backs. You know, positional value be damned. I've supported the Chiefs trying to get better at running back continually for the last couple of years, and they've kind of continued to nickel and dime their way there, and that's fine. But I was excited about this because I do feel like, again, this raises the floor. Something that I feel like I could copy and paste into an article by now is last year the Chiefs really struggled to pass the ball out of 13 personnel, which made them one-dimensional when they sent three tight ends onto the field because Blake Bell isn't a viable pass catching offense option. And, you know, Jody Fortson, the memes exist for a reason. The hype is way more than the production, but at least he could provide you like 180 yards and a couple of touchdowns out of there every once in a while. So I was excited to see Wiley get in there because I think the upside there, like, it checks all the boxes that you want from a day two tight end, where you've got athleticism. Tight ends that are not athletic, they just don't work in the NFL unless they're just pure blockers. He has production as well. Like, he led the Big 12 in touchdowns this year for tight ends. There's a lot to like about his profile. You like the former quarterback. Obviously, if you kind of close your eyes and squint, kind of feels like Travis Kelce. He kind of, like, I was looking through his Instagram yesterday, he's kind of got some of the Kelce aura too, with the chains and the turtlenecks. Good looking guy. So you like a lot of that, and you like the production as well. So I was pretty excited about this, and I feel, you know, this is the type of player that they're going to bring in. He's a strong enough blocker that I think that they could keep three tight ends and he'd be the third tight end. They could keep four with whatever they think of Irv Smith. But one thing that I'm just glad overall about the process is between him and Irv Smith, they've committed to making that spot better. They're prepping for Noah Gray, who will probably leave in free agency. They're prepping in case Travis Kelce gets injured. We've all seen Travis Kelce catch the ball and jog to the sideline for the oxygen. Wiley is someone who can come in and do some of those Travis Kelce things, not at the Travis Kelce level. He's going to be much more like, if I'm envisioning like what his top end potential is, it's like David Njoku, where Njoku is not this route runner who's getting purely open. He's not as physical of a freak. Like, Njoku is just like built in a lab, but more of a yak option at the tight end position. So pretty excited about this pick. Again, a lot of people had him as their tight end two or three. He went beyond that. And I love the value here. The fourth round is where this draft really was a home run.
For me, this was fine. I'm not as high as you, Price. I do see what they were looking at with the eight touchdowns last year. He's 6'6", bigger bodied guy. Again, you're hoping he's almost your Fortson, right? To an extent, like, he's your red zone threat now. The 12 personnel in the end zone, get Kelce and Wiley out there. No more Blake Bell. You can actually get out of Irv Smith's contract. I looked it up the other day. I think for only $384,000 is guaranteed for Irv Smith. If I'm not mistaken. So it's not
like
that.
Yeah, he's no sure thing to make the roster, for sure.
Exactly. So it wasn't like some massive deal. It all depends on roster construction. This was fine to me. This didn't move the needle. There's a couple other players on the board that I actually would have preferred. Booker, the edge rusher from Kansas. Really big fan of his. I thought there was a ton of upside with him. I was shocked Booker was still on the board. This is coming from a Mizzou guy, right? From a Mizzou guy. I'm still sitting here going, yeah, that KU guy, I'd take a look at him. I would be intrigued in that guy. And then also from Mizzou, Chris Abrams, Drain, the cornerback. He's a bigger bodied guy. I know they went cornerback in the sixth round. I like that pick. We'll get to that obviously in a second. But I thought Chris Abrams, Drain was more of a higher floor there at cornerback. So I kind of wouldn't have mind that pick as well. Again, this Jared Wiley pick to me is fine. I'm excited that they're spending more draft capital. But tight end's always a concern. I always have an issue as far as understanding developmental right? Developmental, where how tight ends develop. It always seems like that's one of the most unique positions to really get a grasp on of what they're going to be in the NFL.
I didn't like the process here. This is when I started to get angry about trading up because it cost you. Because by the third round, then I was howling at the moon for give me a running back other than like the five replacement players you're going to throw at me. Like after the draft, everyone starts going crazy about another undrafted free agent again, right?
Denarius Prince
or Imani Bailey, the TCU back.
Yeah, Imani Bailey, the new guy. It was last year's. Denarius Prince was last year's. I'm just done with it. I think Pacheco runs violently. I'm nervous. We'll talk all about this later on. But by that mid-round, I was like, you know what I'd love to have? The pick y'all traded away for a position you need to be addressing. And the fact is we never addressed it again. It's first world problems here when you're talking about the Super Bowl winners. They got by with replacement level players. They'll do it again. But I'm dying for someone good in the backfield. I didn't like this pick just because of that positionally where I wanted to see the Chiefs go. And also Noah Gray is going to bowl out in a contract year. He's going to take full advantage and be there. And so if you already have Irv Smith as TE3 with decent hands, I just didn't think you needed it. But
same page as you, Matt. I'm kind of the same boat.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. What'd you think?
And just to go finish that statement, I mean, Irv Smith is not someone that you want to like really do anything around with. I mean, he's been given a litany of chances. Like the Vikings loved him so much, they took him early and they, you know, traded for the guy they have now, Hockenson. He's injured frequently, Irv Smith is. So, I think it'd be a great sign if they, you know, if Irv Smith doesn't make the roster. So, I totally get that.
I just think tight end is nearly impossible to identify. That's the one position I think NFL teams don't understand how to identify. I don't understand how to identify. And so that's when I see a tight end, being took, I'm just like, yeah, I don't see it because the track records have shown this is literally this of any position, get a dartboard out and just throw it. Cause first round to seventh round, you have zero idea what that tight end is going to be.
It is a little weird that way. Go ahead.
And I think, you know, having him here in the building with Kelsey, with Gray, two good tight ends, because like Noah Gray is a very realistic outcome for him as a player, not Travis Kelsey, right? But get him in the building and like tight end development, it takes time. So the good news is like if this is their first dart throw, they're not expecting him to come in and wanted to like produce right away. So I do like that element of it is that like the pathway there is it makes sense.
Let's throw two of the next three picks together because we have two offensive linemen and we have two defensive backs. And I want to talk about the defensive backs as a package. In the fourth at 133, we grabbed Hicks out of Washington State. Cougars, three-year starter for the Cougars there. And then in the sixth, we grabbed Kamal Haddon out of Tennessee, adding a corner, adding a safety. Everyone was in love with the value of the safety, I think, based on everything that I've seen. I was thrilled that we got him at that point, even mainstream Kuiper, all the way through Brugler and everyone else was like, this is great value.
Brett Feach was even like, we weren't looking at him, and we were like, we got to take him. Like, when they drafted Wiley first, I was cracking up because the team in between them at 131 and 133, 132 was the Lions. Well, the Lions need a lot of secondary help. And so part of me is wondering if there can just be like plausible deniability, like, oh no, the Lions took him at 132. We wanted him at 133. And then when he was still there at 133, my thought was, yeah, they have to take him now. Like the value is just off the charts here.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of that duo that the Chiefs brought in to compete?
The Jane Hicks pick was my favorite of the draft for the Chiefs. Yeah. Just excellent surplus value. You know, safeties, it's a little bit of what you value. Its scheme matters here a little bit. Some teams probably didn't have him as high because he profiles more like a box safety rather than a deep third portion of the field. But for the Chiefs, I feel so confident about their ability to get a good skill set into the room and maximize its potential. And that's one of the things that they do best. They don't ask players to do things that they shouldn't be doing. So you love the surplus value. And I love being able to keep a strength. Obviously, the secondary, it's probably not going to be as good as it was when you had a Legarius Sneed. He was an all-pro caliber level corner. But you add another thumper, a great tackling, hitting aggressive safety to what is an already really strong room. I'm, you know, very excited to see what Shamari Connor can do next year. And Justin Reed, he doesn't always get all the love that he should. But one thing that I just love about this is it keeps an identity on the defense. It cannot be stated enough how important it is that these safeties, they lay the wood when they go and tackle screens and running backs. There's a reason why the Chiefs dominated the Dolphins offense twice. And the reason is just because they do all that gimmicky motion, screen, bubble, all that stuff. And the Chiefs DBs, they just sniff it out and they are physical at the point of attack. So I love this. And this gives you the ability to move on from Justin Reed next year if you choose to do that. And it keeps a strength to strength. And again, like, you just love the surplus value. So for that, that's an A for me. I love that. Kamal Haddon, it's really hard to get super critical of a day three pick unless you're like being super aggressive and trading up, or you just despise the player that they took. But Haddon's one of those guys that, like, on tape, you're thinking like late day two, early day three, because he's very physical. He's big. He's got size, great ball production. But the injury that he had at the end of the year, he had a season-ending shoulder injury, really hurt his testing at the combine, hopefully, because the testing was pretty poor. Also, he has pretty short arms for a corner. And there's a little bit of stuff. His brother was arrested for, like, a big felony armed robbery or something like that. He got ejected from a game against Florida for punching another player. So he's got some dog in him. I think, like, that those two things combined could have scared some teams off with the bad testing. But again, like, you want to tell me the Chiefs get this guy who's got like some outside corner safety versatility, who's big framed, who's got a little dog to him, that, you know, brother's been in legal trouble. Like, that sounds just like L'Jarius Sneed. Sign me up, brother. So I like that one as well. A B for me, a worthwhile gamble. You knew that they were going to do it. It's just like, what was the player for me this year? I was like, oh, it's going to be Jarius Monroe out of Tulane. Like, I wrote about him. I was just hoping that my lottery ticket hit, but they went a bit a little bit earlier. So overall, I loved both picks.
You're telling me a six-round feisty player from Tennessee who has injury concerns? Trey Smith and Hayden, baby, hand in hand. I mean, you're telling me a 6'1 SEC corner who's had great production, and not just production interception-wise, but as far as traveling with wide receivers. I love the gamble here. Like, this is the type of guy you want to see the Chiefs take in the sixth round. I was a big fan of this move for Haydn. I love that pick, Hicks, as we've talked about. And just, I think you're right as far as the box safety notion. Well, what does Justin Reed do best? Justin Reed's best when he's up in the box laying the wood, right? So I think you're right. And I know Steve Cashman in the chat said it as well. Hicks might be the steal of the draft. Reed won't get a new deal. Yeah, if you want to move on from Justin Reed, again, I like Justin Reed. I like him a lot more than a good old Adam Best does. I know me and him always go at it in regards to Justin Reed. But I do think if you're trying to save some money and you don't want to re-sign Justin, then I think you probably have your replacement with Hicks. And then you have, you know, Brian Cook and Shamari Connor. And so this was a great depth signing for both guys, Haydn and Hicks. Big fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, the Brian Cook injury coming into this year is no longer a thing. Now you have Connor. Now you have Hicks. Now you have, it's as deep as it gets, man. Let's not forget this dynasty started with Dan Sorensen getting tons of playing time. And what's happened at that position now is it's fully cost controlled, deep with starters, guys who deserve more playing time. That's a real thrill. There's no way that they keep paying Reed with this presence of talent around. It's a real bonus that way. Let's end here on the two offensive linemen. You have Hunter Norzad out of Penn State, looking like maybe the new Allegretti. C.J. Hansen, the total athletic flyer in the seventh round from the football pipeline known as Holy Cross. Price, we're going to you on this one. What'd you think of those flyers on day three?
Yeah, again, I really like the process here. Some people have brought up Hunter Norzad in relation to like Trey Smith and how this works out. The Chiefs didn't have a backup punter or a backup center right now. Mike Caliendo has taken some snaps in camp, I believe, but you want someone who is very confident in doing that if they have to. How many games have you seen where the center gets injured and the next like series, the punt goes flying over the QB's head? So you definitely want that to be right in case it does happen. You brought up Nick Allegretti. that's a great ceiling of any day three offensive line pick, right? Like, you would be thrilled if you could get this utility offensive lineman who plays above average when he comes in and is, you know, ready to go and versatile. Some things that you really like about Norzad: really intelligent guy. You know, it was like an engineer degree, had like a really high SAT score, recruited by several, Ivy League schools. And you really like the ability that he can snap and play guard. I like him overall as the pick because I think it just provides insurance along the way. The Chiefs aren't moving. You know, I've seen this where Creed snaps have not been the best. There was a hand injury. Are they going to move him to guard and maybe put Norzad in there? The Chiefs are not going to pay Creed Humphrey as a center and then kick him out to guard. That'd be pretty dirty. They need to pay him as a guard if they're going to evaluate him as a guard. And we know that the guard contracts have been wild this year. So I think, you know, it would be amazing if he were able to step in for Joe Tooney or Trey Smith, whichever ones are not here or not or here next year. And then, yeah, CJ Hansen, this is just you take a body that you like and hope to develop him. He's going to be fighting for a roster spot probably this year in camp. That's okay. He's probably a practice squad candidate. Or if he does make the active 53, he's probably someone that's not going to be active on game day. And you're totally okay with that. This is like a Jordan Mailata gamble, right? Not quite the gamble where it's like, oh, has he ever played football before? No. Chiefs have one of those, but not in the draft. But you take a player like that and you just bet on Andy Heck. It would be, you know, like the ultimate lottery ticket if both these guys turn into starting level guards. So for Norzad, I'm going, I don't want to sound down on it because I do like it. There are times on tape that he gets pretty overwhelmed. The Ohio State tape against Michael Hall, it's pretty scary. Now, he didn't get a lot of help from his guards, and that's something that we will never fully understand is like what was going on here communication-wise. The interview that he has done with some other local KC media, he seems like a great guy. So I'll give that a B- just because I think that was just kind of like at expectation value. That's probably about where most people had him. They took him. And CJ Hansen, like, I'll just give it another B just because it's just like they took a player at the place. I might have wanted a running back there. Like, I've been clamoring for Dylan Johnson, running back from Washington, who does a lot of things the Chiefs like, but I'm totally okay with it. So overall, you like the investment here. And again, this is what championship level rosters do. They don't wait for a need to arise and then try to start patching the hole on the sinking ship. They prep for these things. They build the ship so it doesn't have glaring holes that need to be filled immediately. So guess what? The Chiefs could potentially have three interior offensive linemen hitting free agency next year. They're going to start taking them now.
I liked Norzad a good amount. Again, I think he's your Allegretti fix this year. But again, you're hoping he can take one of those spots of Trey, of Creed, again, backup center, or of Joe Tooney if they decide to move on once their contracts or rookie contracts or Joe Tooney's actual contract with the Chiefs are up. I like the Norzad pick a lot. He's played right tackle, guard, and center. Love that. Love the versatility. Chiefs value versatility. CJ Hansen, again, upside on the offensive line. I understand it. Was not my favorite pick, though, in that spot. I also understand I'm being critical of a 7th round upside guard. It's a little silly. I get it. I'm not actually mad, but I'm with you. I think a running back would have made some sense. You know, my love of Cody Schrader, it shines through. Cody Schrader would have been a lot of fun. I think Blake Watson from Memphis, who was a UDFA, thought would have been a nice pickup. I thought maybe you draft him in the 7th round because he's your Jerick McKinnon replacement, right? A very good third down back, a little bit of a scat back. Thought that made some sense. Brennan Rice, I would have liked to see. He was drafted in the 7th round, so you would have had to actually go up in the 6th and not draft Hayden because just how the Chiefs draft later than the Chargers. That's how the draft works because you're winning Lombardis. I thought that would have been intriguing there. Frank Crum was the other guy from Wyoming, UDFA. He's your super athletic 6'8" tackle from Wyoming. I thought was fascinating. But end of the day, I can't complain too much about depth on the offensive line. You got to build in the trenches, and the Chiefs are very good at building in the trenches.
I'll add this. I said earlier, 1st and 2nd round were the big gambles rather than the floor. They ended the draft the same way. That guy, CJ Hansen, is the opposite of Allegretti. Remember, Allegretti was a last round pick. Athleticism, more known for his experience at Illinois with years of starts along the interior versus like being some athletic marvel they were taking a flyer on. They did that with Norzad already. But then they went back and grabbed a guy like that in the 7th. So we're seeing in this draft on a macro level, I think we're seeing Brett Veach begin to make maybe a little bit more dice rolls, if you will, or more upside plays in this draft than we've seen in some previous years. If they hit, goodbye NFL. I mean, it is. I mean, really, right? Let's say if Xavier Worthy hits, if you find your left tackle, if you find your deep threat, if you find a Duvernay Tardif, which, by the way, is what CJ Hansen, like an uber athletic play from a small school. That's what Duvernay Tardif was all about. And then he ends up, you know, being a starter. So if you hit on those guys, they'll take you far. So that's what we're seeing here. We are up against time. Does anyone want to make a last word about your observations of the overall draft class?
I'll just say that I think that this draft in particular, I thought it was a really nice job of addressing positions of need without getting panicky. You know, in years past when the Chiefs have had tackle holes, they trade first round picks for Orlando Brown, or they send, you know, a first and a second and give a mega contract to a pass rusher. And then they also did, I know you kind of referred to it as a luxury pick, not quite as luxurious as Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 32. I don't think that they got too sipping on their own medicine, they didn't get too crazy. There wasn't some big, like, you know, I saw this thing like Chiefs should, you know, just end the problem with left tackle and trade up all their draft to go get Joe Alt, which would be great. But you know, the draft will come tomorrow and Joe Alt could get hurt. You never know these type of things. So, I thought they did a good job of balancing like all in for the 3-peat, but also keeping the future years in mind. So overall, I was really pleased with it, and I had a great time. Like, the draft is my favorite time of the year for the NFL because all 32 fan bases are engaged. You know, poor Giants fans, like week three, they're out. Like, they're done. They're done watching football. But they're engaged during this time, and that's why it was so fun to have the draft in Kansas City last year. It's a great cycle, great draft. Love the whole process, and I'm just thankful I got a great platform to do it on.
Yeah,
love it.
I kind of second a lot of what you said. Love the great platform that we have here, but also too, I love the process. Again, we won't know how these guys play out until years down the road, but I like the process of this draft, and that means a lot to me. It means a lot to how the Chiefs operated. It means a lot that they tried trading up higher multiple times, and the rest of the NFL basically told them no, and they still got the guys they wanted. There were no reaches, in my opinion. There were no questionable picks where you're sitting here going, what the hell was this? Again, even like Wiley in the fourth, while I'm not the biggest fan of that necessarily because of tight end Matt Connor, you and I kind of agree there, I still understand where they are coming from. And overall, 7 picks, I understand the process behind, I think, every single one. And that's something we can say, and let's be real now, the Broncos, the Falcons, and a lot of other fan bases might not be able to say.
Oh, the Falcons. I actually like... We won't go there, folks. You will listen to the Arrowhead. Not. You will listen to the Arrowhead Attic podcast. So much appreciate Price Carter taking some time out. You can follow him at Price A Carter. Do I have that right?
Yep, Price A Carter.
I'm trying to read my screen, and it's on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I guess I just did. Undermining my own self. Anyway, follow him there. Follow him on our site where he is just writing like crazy about all kinds of Chiefs rookies and young players. As always, for Sterling Holmes, for myself, for our producer, Richard, we always appreciate any time, any way that you all interact with us, read our stuff, hang out, listen. It's a real thrill and a privilege to be able to do this. So until next time. Tomorrow, Adam Best, Sterling Holmes here for Wacky Wednesday, further draft breakdown, and more Chiefs news. Until then, we'll see you later.